chatting tonight with an amazing personality, a person who is really affecting change in the world, someone who is really giving a lot of his time to serving others. And it's genuinely such an honor and such an amazing blessing that we've somehow managed to line this up and managed to get this to happen tonight. Without further ado, I first want to add our wonderful guest to the conversation, and then I'll give a small introduction. But thank you all.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, I'm just not hearing you so clearly, please.
I see. Does it need to be a little bit louder?
If possible, but...
Is it much clearer now?
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I want to welcome our wonderful guest, His Holiness Satchidananda Swami, to this beautiful conversation. But first of all, let's ask His Holiness how he is. It's only right to be courteous and check. You know, our dear guest is well-situated, had a good day perhaps. What have you been up to today, Maharaj?
Yes, I had a wonderful walk by the lake. I had a very fulfilling morning time with a deep meditation where I felt the spiritual reality was touched. Oh. That's very important for me to be like a diver. I feel myself to be like a diver, and I need a snorkel which goes up so that I can breathe. So this snorkel, I think, is spiritual practice, and when we can then breathe the air of the spirit, we become enlivened. I have also worked on my meditational book. I'm now two-thirds through the final editing, and what else? Many things.
It's so beautiful to hear someone who is really dedicated in their time, not only to their own personal practice, but also seeking time to be able to give to others. And it's an inspiration for me, and I'm sure for many people who are listening. As you're tuning in, my dear friends, please kindly suggest where you're from, what you've been doing. Have you been having a spiritual day also? What have you been doing to deeply absorb yourself, to serve others, to share with others? We'd love to hear, and I'd love to give you some shout-outs as well. But for those of you who are tuning in who don't know His Holiness Satchidananda Swami, I want to give a brief introduction, which I'm sure won't give it any justice, but it's only right for those of you that don't know him that definitely you should get a nice introduction. For sure, if you haven't heard of him, you're probably hiding under a rock, because he's a person who is traveling constantly back when the world was as it was, giving, sharing as an author of many different publications, as a guide, as a guru, as a swami and teacher, someone who's dedicated 50 years of his life to the practice of bhakti yoga, to sharing that with others. And it's really such an honor to have you here, to be sharing with us, to be spending this time with us. It's almost, even though most people have so much time on their hands, for someone who is so engaged and so dedicated to sharing with others, this time is so valuable, because I know you could be doing so many other things. So from our side, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
I always consider to give back is as important as breathing out. We breathe in, so in our spiritual life we also take care of our own well-being, but then afterwards we need to contribute. In fact, there are two great needs for someone who's on the spiritual path. The need is to grow, this is the first need, and the second is to contribute, to give back. And once one does, one will feel, wow, I learned to inhale. I learned to exhale. Up till now, I have only taken. But now, wow, this is a total new dimension, the life of also exhaling. So contributing or doing something for others is is really, really important. And I consider writing the books and then making many recordings and so on as a very, very important factor to my own well-being also, really.
To this quote rings true for so many of us that the basic need of every human being is to give love to others and to receive love also. And most of us in the modern age, or this is my observation anyways, it seems that most people are stuck on only wanting to receive love. And the ways in which we give love are only limited to either gift giving or giving in a way where we expect something in return. And so it's so rare to be in conversation or to even meet someone who is dedicating their time in a selfless way. And it is really selfless because it doesn't seem, anyway, from my perspective, that you're expecting anything in return from those who which you're sharing with. I don't know, maybe you can correct me otherwise.
Yeah, it is. Once you add the "what do I get for this," it's no longer love, it's a trade. Consider the essential difference between I like and I love. When I say I like, it's really for my benefit. When I say I love, it's for another's benefit. There was once a guru who wanted to make this very clear to his disciples. And he said, look at this flower. If I like this flower, I will cut it and maybe put it behind my ear or in my shirt hole here or or anywhere. If I love the flower, I will go and give water to it, so that it can grow. So like is selfish, love is selfless. And it is so much nicer to see a flower growing. So much fragrance will come. And you will be able to look at the flower much, much longer than if you only cut it away. So this is
such a beautiful perspective to see that it's not something which I take, it's not something that I'm expecting something in return. And this analogy of the flower, I think many people will relate to that. And I think anyone who's a parent, for example, a father, a mother, they can perhaps attribute this much better than, for example, those of us who are single, maybe in a partner relationship, you've experienced that. And if you have, please do share with us. You know, please do write a question or a comment regarding love in a selfless way. In this related topic, because I noticed, I did the quick math, and I noticed that you've been a guide and a guru for 33 years, and that is quite a phenomenal number, that to dedicate that many number of years to giving to people, to serving people, and guiding them. My question was, how did you know, or was there a moment where you realized, or was there a lead of events that kind of pointed you towards this direction as per your purpose, as per you being a guide, being a leader, being a teacher, a guru? Was there any moment like this?
I think so. That something in particular showed me that I should be guiding others. I had been traveling through Europe, first the German-speaking countries, and then I came to Scandinavia and to other countries and as well. And what I began to notice whenever I did my second round, first round I just gave concerts, lecture programs, met people on an individual basis whose addresses were there and who had invited me to make a house event at their house with their friends. There was a first round, and I went around Europe like this. I remember I drew an 8 over Europe, and I went in around. The expected happened. But when I did the second and later the third rounds of my 8, I noticed people came with very deep questions. And they said, maybe on the third round, can you please guide us? We can see you have crossed over obstacles which are right before our eyes. What did you do? But I must tell you very frankly that guiding is one thing. I think every one of us does this. But to take on the official role of a guru is quite scary. Yes, because you are sometimes seen in a way which you may not be comfortable with. So much praise may be heaped upon you, so much expectations, your picture of yourself may be so exaggerated at times that as a sincere spiritual practitioner, you don't feel happy. I can best express it with a little story, if you will bear with me. once Jesus was coming into Jerusalem. It was the high festival day. I forgot which one, but a really high festival day. And people were throwing flowers on him. There were musicians greeting him, people dancing. He was waved with these huge palm leaves at. And he was thinking like this, this praise goes to someone else, it goes to him. Now he came riding on a donkey, and the donkey did not think the praise was for someone else. He thought, finally, they realize that I'm an extraordinary donkey, not at all an ordinary donkey and a usual donkey. No, I'm a total unusual, highly talented donkey. I feel also when you are asked, and only your spiritual teacher can ask you this, to become a guru. Then the moment you start to think, yes, the praise is for me, yes, I'm extremely talented, you forget that the praise is given to someone high, someone up there, the one with the many names, who can give all the benedictions to each human being. And I think we are seen, every one of us, also Radhika, you become now a very important voice and face on the internet. If you think of this is for me, and you become actually a vacuum. A vacuum sucks in energy. Only someone who's full, he gives, he serves, and he knows the praise is for whatever I say. It is not my words. I'm trying to be transparent. I'm trying to guide people to the one who can really give all the benedictions.
Yes. So true what you're saying. But I find myself so often, I can only speak frankly for myself, going to that donkey mentality is so easy. to be in the mentality that the praise is for me. The praise, this easy to switch into that mentality, and for you to describe it in that analogy is so clear, actually, to see it in that way. And for anyone that's watching, that's sharing, maybe a yoga teacher, a meditation practitioner that shares, someone who is giving to the world in a way where you're the vessel, it's important to always remember in that respect that we are just the vessel, that the message itself is of transcendental quality, or the message is of importance. And it's so nice that you shared that in the analogy of Jesus and the donkey. I went to see, actually, there were some beautiful comments here, and it's so beautiful to see so many of you joining. Thank you so much. Rockin' Rooksy, thank you for being here.
Rooksy, yeah.
Great Educate, thank you so much. Achyuta Gopi, Christine, thank you so much for your comments. There is a beautiful question here, actually. Pure Eloquence asks, how do we give selflessly, or give love selflessly, without burning out?
You have asked a very good question. I don't know which gesture I should do, this one or this one. Or excellent. So, yes, for those in the helping profession, also in the serving profession, there is something which is called compassion fatigue. It's something when you give and give and give and give, and after some time you feel, I can't see any people any longer, they get on my nerves. And you, this is called compassion fatigue. It is a very well-known problem which does come when you have not taken care of your tree of life. Let me be more clear. We as human beings have three areas which we need to take care of in order to be strong. There's our roots, our spiritual roots. There is our stem, our trunk, that is our physical body, and also our emotions. Mind and body are very, very much connected. And then there is our social dimension. We as human beings are four, really. Spiritual beings, physical beings, emotional beings, and social beings. And we really need to have all the things intact. I know one healer, he was working really in the social dimension. He didn't say no to anyone. One day he came to me totally burned out. He had a breath which came from the mouth, which really smelled, there was some sickness inside. A healer. He was dejected. He had been misunderstood. And some people had said something really bad about him, who were envious on his success. But he took it so much to heart. Oh, he was destroyed. And he said, Swamiji, can you help me? I said, I will try. But please describe your situation first of all. And he then described that, yes, he has been seeing people all day, and in the night he is on the phone, and he of those in other time zones, taking care of other time zones. And I said, wow, you are like a tree who has no roots, no trunk, or a little trunk, no bark to protect him. You have only branches, twigs, which go far, far, far out. But the further you want to stretch out in the social level, that means the more you want to give lectures, the more you want to give programs, the more you want to heal others, the more you want to be there for others, the more you must think about your trunk, huh? And your roots, otherwise you fall. So I suggest to you that you put on your social media a little news. It is called Healer, Heal Yourself. And you go now to take care of these dimensions in your life. You may only need 2 weeks and then you can be back, but with wisdom in your pockets. The wisdom of the tree of life, where you take care of your roots, your trunk, and also your crown. He was very interested in this. I met him on another conference where he was invited and I was also invited, and it seemed to be all right, and we spoke briefly, and he said, thank you for your tree, but I do hope really that he will be able to maintain it. That's my constant difficulty, that I know about this, but when I'm traveling, then I cannot say to any appointment, I cannot say no to any appointment. So therefore, in this limited sense, I appreciate the lockdown. I don't appreciate the situation, because so much anxiety is there in people's mind. But personally, for me, this is the tree of life lockdown.
Thank you so much for sharing that holistic model. It sounds, in one sense, so rudimentary, but once you put it in the analogy of a tree, it's very easy to identify. In fact, maybe it's not easy to identify so clearly what areas you're lacking in, but then it might be a case that you need to seek guidance on the areas where you feel, just getting another perspective from someone saying, where do you think I need to improve my tree of life? Just like I've had this from yourself, like a painter steps back, sometimes the perspective can be clearer from somebody else that can tell you, this is an area perhaps in your tree of life, be it the spiritual, the physical body, the emotional, or the social, the way in which you give back. It's sometimes clearer from a different perspective. But thank you for sharing that model. By the way, guys, if you're not taking notes, then this is valuable information. This is information that will really help you to deepen your spiritual practice, to live in a more fulfilled way. And especially this model of the tree of life is something that I personally practice and try to reflect regularly what areas I need to change. And so I recommend anyone that's listening to please make a note of it, and to please take an opportunity to reflect after this session about the areas in which you want to perhaps add or take away or improve or spend more time on, especially in this situation, as Maharaj was very nicely suggesting. I wanted to ask you about mantra, because one reason why I was so attracted to your teaching and the way in which you practice is, from my observance, it was really clear that you were someone that deeply wanted to absorb themselves in the practice of chanting mantra. And you've written plenty of books, many different publications, and one that I'm sharing on a daily basis with everyone that's joining our daily japa sessions is this wonderful publication, The Living Name, A Guide to Chanting with Absorption. And in this book, there is one quote that just struck me. It pulled at my emotional and also my intellectual strings. It really caught me, and I wanted to read it out, and I wanted to see if you could elaborate perhaps on this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The holy name, the mantra, will reveal itself only when and how they choose to do so. There is no technique or skill we can learn that will make Krishna appear in our hearts. We can do whatever is in our power to push the door open, but it will undoubtedly remain closed until it is opened from inside. It goes on to say in following paragraphs, don't be a passionate achiever. Instead, become a grateful receiver. When I heard these words, it very much spoke to me, because in the kirtan scene, in the bhakti yoga scene, there seems to be a culture growing where people are advertising that when you come to the kirtan, you will have a blissful experience, an ecstatic experience. When you come and chant and the association of those who are also chanting, you will have 100% a blissful ecstatic experience. And this kind of does seem to be in this passionate achiever mode as opposed to grateful receiver. And I wanted to just see what your thoughts were behind these words, or if you had any thoughts to share with the audience in these words.
Thank you for this very for this question, which goes really to a very deep place. Very often our expectations ruin what we experience, because we look only in one area, in one direction, the direction of where our expectations lie, and not in the direct, we are not open any longer to what comes, maybe from an entirely different area. I have seen really that when it comes to real, genuine spiritual experiences, they are revelations. They come from above, like the rain. If I try to reach the place where the rain comes from, like the cloud, by climbing up the rain drops, I will never get there. Maybe you have been a good rope climber in your school. At least in German schools, I remember we had to climb ropes. Yes, many are able to make it to the top. When it comes to spiritual reality, to God, to a genuine spiritual experience, to genuine, vast love, it is a given, like the raindrops. All you can do is bring a good container, an open heart, so that it can come in there. So in mantra chanting, either in the meditative japa way or in the more expressive kirtan way, it is good to be to wait for that door to be opened by who is there on the transcendental level. Great saints, Krishna, grace, or if you prefer to be an atheist, the unknown. then it works. I will end. I live here in a little lake ashram. It is beautiful, right on the side of the lake, and we have one house door. It's a very ancient carved door, and when I come from my walks back, I always find the door closed. It's one of these doors. You draw them behind you when you go out. Look, and it makes like click, and then it's closed. And there's nothing I can do to push my way into this ashram. I have to ring the bell. I have to make a sound. Sometimes those who are in the ashram are so busy that they don't hear. I have to make several sounds. Sometimes I have to take an acorn, I think it's called, and throw it against the window of Gokrishna, my assistant. I have to make a sound, and he has to come and open the door and bring it to the inside. So I think in mantra chanting, we make a sound. Let's make a good sound, a clear sound. Let's give our best to be attentive while we make our sound. And then let us joyfully wait or peacefully wait until something comes. And do you know what? Often I have seen the kirtan experience happens when you're almost at your end. Like I remember, I have been often in kirtan events, and I'm not such a good singer as, for instance, Achyuta Gopi is, or Malaharina, Mamadava, or these very accomplished singers. Also Krishna Das has a beautiful deep voice. And all I have is, let us say, that conviction and enthusiasm that kirtan is an absolute amazing spiritual practice, and it can open doors, I mean, or doors are opened by it, which will be closed for me otherwise. So that's all I know. This conviction and enthusiasm, which is with me, which is based on experience. And I do remember, because I don't think myself of a second Pavarotti in kirtan. I don't, for instance, I have been with large assemblies, and they all think, oh, the Sachin Anand Swami comes, he has written so many books, and when he gets into it, the kirtan start to go really, all strings are and chains are broken, and everyone dances and so on. Or when he goes the meditative way, etc. There are certain things they tell about me, but I always think, oh, I'm trying my best, but if it is not coming from you, if the grain of mercy does not come down now, this will be dry, extremely dry. So this is all I know about kirtan. And yes, therefore, I know very well, be the receiver, bring an open vessel, bring an open heart. A heart which is not closed by arrogance.
Wow, these insights. I mean, one thing that struck me from what you said, and it actually follows on in the next sentence in this paragraph I was reading, was about never hesitating to go all the way, because the Lord always lies beyond our endeavor. In other words, we have to give our best when it comes to the practice, but letting Krishna, letting God, letting divinity, letting grace do the rest. And this concept of patience when it comes to our practice sometimes gets lost in an age, in a modern world, where we expect things on our fingertips, we expect experiences to be... And not to say that they're not sometimes. For example, my first experience of kirtan was with Sachin Anand Swami. And I still remember I sat at the back of the kirtan, frustrated as a teenage boy, not wanting to sing, because I was convinced that real men do not sing. It's not a thing. And by the end, I remember jumping and dancing in ecstasy. And I was so enchanted, I needed to find out what happened to me. And now, 15 years later, here I am, having this conversation with the person that started it all. And it's not to say that every experience was like the first. And I guess it takes a level of maturity and patience to just be able to remain with the process, patiently knocking, with every mantra, with every endeavor, trying to be present. Do you also, and this is a question that may be a bit too personal, but you can field it as you like, do you also have moments in your chanting where you feel frustrated or impatient? And what do you do to, in that moment, bring yourself back to giving your best with the process, I guess?
Yes. I know the desert. Yes. I have a very interesting perspective on this. I think it is already a great achievement when you notice, oh, my mantra chanting is lousy. Oh, I'm distracted. Oh, it's not going well. And oh, I'm so frustrated. Worse than this, much, much worse is that you don't notice, that you're just going along and there is no feeling. There's just an, let us say, an emotional disconnection and inner dumbness. Dumbness, you will have to help me with the right, you know, numbness is the word, yes, an inner numbness, I wanted to say. But once you notice, for instance, that your mind is distracted, oh, then you can go and get him back. Search for him. Where are you? Oh, there. Good. Later. Now, chanting. When you notice, oh, after all these long years, I'm really in an absolute, let us say, dull way, then you can, okay, what do we do now against it? But the worst is when you lie in a spiritual coma where you don't even see that something is not alright. A step worse is even, worse, now we are in the minus category, is when you have a lot of things going on in the world of illusion, and you think, wow, this illusion is a super cool illusion, you know, and become so attached that it's very difficult for you to move out. So there are much worse things than feeling frustrated and dull. What you need to do, though, it's very important, is don't stay at this place once you notice, but get out of this place. It's almost like when you notice there is a disease in my body which takes so much strength away from me. Okay, what do we do now? Okay, I get it. We have to now eat no milk products, not so much sugar, so on. My liver is a little bit overdosed at the moment, and then you do the right thing, and then soon you will be healthy if it's not something very serious.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing this point. First, be conscious. If you're conscious that there's something wrong, you're so fortunate. You're so fortunate to be in a place where you're aware that there is maybe a lack of or something blocking, and then to not constantly just stay frustrated, but somehow get out, find your way out. This point is so pertinent. Thank you for sharing it. Thank you all so much for your beautiful comments. Anna, it seems to me that during this time when we are unable to go out in the world, the achieve mentality is melting away, making way for the receive mentality. So true, Anna. Thank you for sharing that.
So true.
Govindas, thank you so much from LA for sharing the deserts. Yeah, sometimes we all experience. Govindas, I know, is a wonderful kirtan leader and owns a bhakti yoga shala in LA. So thank you so much for joining the conversation. Achyuta Gopi writes, Maharaj's conviction and enthusiasm is everything. Literally life-changing. I couldn't agree more, Achyuta Gopi.
Thank you, Achyuta Gopi. Thank you.
And I'll see if there's any others. There is a question here by Ravi Talsa. He says, nowadays, anyone with a social media page has become a guru in telling the world what they should be doing during the pandemic time that we should have been unexpectedly given. What goals or areas to focus on? Do you have any thoughts?
I must say that I could hear up to... everyone now tells what should be done during the pandemic, and then so, I missed the last part. Somehow the internet was not good.
That during this time, everyone has become a guru in telling the world what they should be doing during the pandemic time. What goals or areas should we focus on? Would you recommend? I'm actually going to come back to this question, because right at the end of every session, we always come back to tips for our time. And so, if you, with your permission, Maharaj, we'll return to this question at the end.
It's a super question.
It is, for sure. And we will address it right at the end. But I wanted to see at this moment, because a feature of these conversations has been that every single guest has shared a prayer, a meditation, sometimes even a kirtan or a mantra. Would you be prepared? I don't know whether you prepared something in advance, a meditation of sort, that you could share with us, that we could practice with you at this moment.
Well, I'm just writing a book about it, so I can spontaneously, I would love to guide you. Please tell me how much time we have for this, because
sure,
we could do very long ones and very brief ones. Please
sure,
tell
I
me.
Think 10 minutes is sufficient.
Yes.
We can then field final questions and maybe tips for your time, for our time, would be a fantastic closer for the session.
I request all of you to participate in this. It's time now, as I say always when I do this on social media, to put the bags of chips to the side and everything else, because if we create now something in this space, something together, it will be a very good experience for us, the more the better, and it will be a very good experience for the world also, some good good atmosphere will be created, a healing atmosphere. I would like you all to sit relaxed. And take a few deep breaths. Mindful breaths. When you breathe in, stay with your mind at that inhaling air. You know you're breathing in. When you breathe out, each time, stay with your outgoing breath. Often our mind is restless and flies around hastily from one thought to the next. Now we land with our mind on our breath, almost like a falcon, a very fast bird, settles on the perch. Now, in our mind, we say an amazing mantra. Whenever we breathe out in our mind, we say hum. When we breathe in, we say in our mind sa. Let us all take a deep breath now in. And now, and an inhale, sigh. Deep inhales on the syllable sa, mental syllable sa. Deep exhales on the mentally pronounced syllable hum. Please, as I talk to you, guide you. This is a meditation on sound. We will now make an audible sound, which will go all around the world. It's the syllable Ram. You will find the syllable Ram when priests chant it while they offer oblations in the fire. The syllable brings these oblations up. You'll find the syllable also when you continue to breathe, please, deep in and out, as a holy name of Ram. Deep inhale now, and Ram. Deep inhale. I will talk to you, but continue, please. Inhale. Feel the sound throughout the pores in your body. As you continue, let all the pores in your body dance to the vibration. Deep inhale. Bring your mind only to the sacred sound. And three more rounds with all you got. Breaths. And please return back to Instagram awareness.
Thank you so much for leading us in that wonderfully peaceful and guided meditation. If you all appreciated that, please do share some appreciation by pressing that love button, of course, and sharing some encouragement in the comment section. If you practice with us, let us know your experience. It would be lovely to hear. We have 10 minutes left of this conversation, approximately, and I wanted to end by asking our dear Maharaj whether you had any tips for our time. That question was there at the beginning regarding there's so many gurus out there now, self-professed gurus on Instagram, each giving their own teachings. But what would be your suggested thoughts when it came to tips for our time? What should we be engaging in at this present moment?
I didn't want to be impolite, so I looked at the comments there in the.
Wow,
in
so
the,
much love stream.
Yeah. Thank you. In the book, you will find many other meditations, compassion meditations, nature meditations, inner strength meditations, finding your inner voice. So many good ones. Yes, I think there are a lot of very valuable comments on the Instagram, and some are more valuable than the others, like always. I personally would just say that such a situation where we are restricted in some ways, where there is a lockdown, where there is also some anxiety surrounding us, opens a space. And I'm speaking here of a personal space which everyone has. We all were busy doing things, traveling here and there, meeting friends, going to the working place and back, and all this is now different. There's a space created where there was no space before. Now, spaces or vacuums never stay in this universe. There are no vacuums for long. They pull in energy. And what we have to guard off is that we will not pull in anxiety, dullness, less energy, and so on. But we have to fill this space so that we cannot be affected by those things which are pushed by the very atmosphere in which we live, by the very world in which we live, into our space. We have to learn to discover that, to fill that space which has been created now. And I always have discovered this idea of the tree of life, where you just make, let us say, where you I know now how to best here to explain it. Here. Don't know how visible that is. Yeah. We can see it.
Of course. Yeah.
It's a perfect banyan tree if you look. Better than any photograph. No, I'm joking. So, what you can do is, you can make a tree of life check. See, start with the roots. Is my spiritual practice there? Check it, make a check. Is it there? No? Okay, then it needs to be improved. Then, go to the trunk of your body. Do I do some exercises? If you can't go out, you can do it like Gokrishna and me. We do the 7-minute challenge, a workout, and I do a lot of yoga also. And pranayama. No? Do something, anything, which keeps you working. Also see that your emotions don't get, I call this the spark that protects us of the tree of life, that your emotions don't get the better of you. You know, our mind has the tendency to have this negative talk. Oh, bad. Oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. Think, what I can do. No, there's a lot you can do. Oh, more than before. Maybe you want to take on a project that really interests you. Something where you feel really fired up, where you really feel my heart is into this. I have three such projects at the moment running. You also need to have contact, you know, phone your friends, try to help them, try to give something good to the people. And really, have a checklist. How is my day? Is it today, my roots, are they okay? My stem, my trunk, is that okay today? Oh no, I'm fat like an elephant. This is, some push-ups are required, you know. Maybe not like an elephant, but and so on. Then, my mind is not in good shape at the moment. My emotions are not so good. Let me talk. Let me confide in someone. Let me like this. Let me do a project I like, something I really appreciate. Let me focus on my real goal in life, no? And then do something on the tree. That's something very simple. I like to keep things a little open because, see, when I was born, my grandfather put a seed of an apple tree into his garden. And when I was 7 or 8 years old, or was it 10 years, he said, take care of this, it's your tree. And he thought this is like a symbol for my life. So I want to recommend to all of you, it's your tree also, you need to do it. But this is a general checklist, you can fill it on with you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, wonderful, thank you so much. We've got the picture of the tree. Mine isn't nearly as beautiful as Maharaj's.
No.
I hope you also made a picture, made some notes, made some thoughts. Thank you all so much for your wonderful comments. I wish we could go on longer. The timer is counting me down 50 seconds from now. But of course, I want to thank you, Litsa Yoga, Kusumji, Hendrik. Thank you so much for tuning in. Rekaji, Rani, Anna. Oh, the list goes on and on. And we could have done this for another hour, I think, and still had you all tuned in and asking beautiful questions. Please do check out everything that Sachinanda Maharaj is doing via his Instagram channel, Facebook channel. There's so much content there that can keep you engaged and keep your eyes peeled for this beautiful meditation book. There are so many offerings that are coming through that you should really keep in touch. With the 10 seconds remaining, I want to invite you all to please do join us, of course, tomorrow for our daily japa on my channel at 1 p.m. And with 7 seconds remaining, I will thank you gratefully, and we will tune out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.